Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director of Communication Technology and Programs here at KEI, and I will be your host today. Today, we sit down with Greg Scarlatu, Executive Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, or HRNK. Greg and I discuss the family reunions that will be taking place this week between North and South Korean family members that were separated during the Korean War. On October 20th, around 400 South Koreans from 100 families will have the chance to cross the DMZ to meet with brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, and other family members that they have not seen in 65 years. We will discuss how these reunions have gone in the past, whether they are likely to continue in the future, and some of the human rights implications of reconnecting these divided families, if only for a few days. Greg, thank you very much for joining us today.
Jenna, the pleasure is all mine.
To start off, can you give us a little bit of background on these family reunions? How often have they happened in the past, and what's the general procedure like?
Sure. First and foremost, it's important to remember that this is a highly emotional issue for Koreans, I would say, on both sides of the military demarcation line. Of course, I know much more about how South Koreans feel about this issue. Family reunions have been taking place between the two sides of divided Korea, South Korea, the Republic of Korea in the South, and North Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea in the North, through arrangements made by the Red Cross societies of the two sides since August of 2000, a little bit over 15 years ago. So far, there have been 19 rounds of family reunions that have taken place over the past 15 years. Between 1945 and 1953, of course, numerous people from North Korea came down south as refugees. Of those people who came down to South Korea, 129,668 people have registered as applicants for the Red Cross arranged family reunions. The problem is that to date, for the past 15 years, only 1,956 of these applicants, truly unimpressive, 1.5% of the total, or a truly unimpressive annual average of 130 persons, have succeeded in becoming beneficiaries of face-to-face reunions. Now, Jenna, you have to keep in mind that 129,668 people is a dismal number. This is merely, excuse the cliche, the tip of the iceberg here. It is estimated that in South Korea alone, there are 5 million members of separated families. And what we really have to keep in mind is that these are very senior people who are getting no younger. Basically, over these past 15 years, when we've seen the 19 rounds of family reunions, a total of 62,028 applicants have passed away. Basically 48%, half of all applicants have passed away. That leaves us with 67,640, that is 52% of the total number of applicants still surviving and most likely still being interested in these family reunions.
Right, so there's, as you mentioned, thousands upon thousands of South Koreans on the waiting list. And in this particular round, only about 100 or so families were selected through a lottery to participate. So clearly there's a high demand, at least on the South Korean side. Have there been attempts to rectify the situation and have more reunions on an annual basis?
Well, surely this has been a point made by the South Korean side that family reunions have to happen regularly. So sure, there has been a push by non-governmental organizations in South Korea, and also the South Korean government has made it clear that rather than having these family reunions as fairly isolated events happening once in a blue moon. What the members of these separated families need is regularized meetings.
Right, absolutely. For this particular round in 2015 that's starting this week, are there any major differences compared to the meetings in the past?
Well, I don't think we will see any major differences. We know that in the past, some of these meetings have taken place at facilities financed by South Korean capital, for example, at Mount Kumgang inside North Korea. It was a South Korean corporation, Hyundai Asan, that had invested in this facility. The facility, of course, ran into trouble. This situation ended up in the confiscation of the private property of the Asan Corporation by the North Korean government. In the past, these reunions were sometimes a reunion only in name. So basically, we're talking about 3 daylight days of momentary meetings between family members. The atmosphere was quite militarized. These family reunions were surrounded by barbed wire fences, armed guards, North Korean soldiers. So basically, the environment hasn't necessarily been very conducive to a smooth emotional meeting of families separated for so many decades. But nevertheless, at least the South Korean side tried to make the best out of this. I'm not sure that we have indication that the atmosphere is going to be any smoother or any more conducive to a more emotional approach to these meetings this time around. We'll just have to wait.
Right. I've been reading some of the, I guess, instructions that were given to some of the families before going. Don't ask, you know, have you eaten? Because that can be an insult to the North Korean side. So it's not necessarily a natural meeting.
You're familiar with Korea, of course, you're very familiar with Korea, Jenna, and basically asking somebody whether they've eaten, whether they've had the meal is basically basic. It's a very basic way of interacting. It's the polite way of interacting with people, even with people you may not know, you're meeting for the first time. So just because these meetings are so politicized by the North Korean side, indeed, you end up with awkward situations on your hands.
As you mentioned, one of the main concerns here is that it's been over 60 years since the end of the Korean War, since these people were separated, and that many of them are in their 80s or 90s, those that are still alive. Do you see any sense of urgency? As you mentioned, the South Korean side is trying to make it more regular, but do you see any urgency on the North Korean side?
So far, we haven't seen any sense of urgency as far as the North Korean authorities are concerned. I'm fairly sure that those North Koreans who have family in the South might be experiencing this sense of urgency on a personal level, but just because, just like any other citizen of North Korea, they're subjected to relentless coercion, control, surveillance, and punishment by the authorities of North Korea, of course, they will not feel free to express their concerns or wishes openly. But I think that everyone should experience a sense of urgency. And once again, we only have data here from the South Korean side. The sense of urgency will be, unfortunately, based on pure arithmetic. There is an annual average of 4,135 members of separated families passing away every year. No, basically, as a matter of simple arithmetic, one can see that all surviving applicants will have deceased about 16 years from now, by 2031. This point has been made by NGOs and activists who have a keen interest in this issue. And by the way, this point was made by Justice Michael Kirby in Geneva just a few weeks ago. I was there. That if we continue at this rate and rhythm, it will take 520 years for all of the surviving applicants to succeed in just being momentarily reunited with their families on the other side of the DMZ. So surely, Everyone should experience a sense of urgency, and of course we're experiencing a sense of urgency when dealing with any issue that has to do with the reunification of the Korean Peninsula, the complexities surrounding that issue of reunification. But obviously, in this case, there is a time limit because we are dealing with very senior citizens who are not getting any younger.
You mentioned some other activists and NGOs. Is there a role for outside actors in pushing for more reunions? I'm thinking of other countries, the United Nations, international NGOs. What role have they been playing?
Yes, surely. These initiatives must be supported by UN agencies. They must be supported by government agencies. They must be supported by non-governmental organizations. There is one organization that has distinguished itself in particular. That is the Korean Assembly for the Reunion of 10 Million Separated Families, CARTS, in South Korea. This is an NGO that has special consultative status with ECOSOC at the United Nations. This is one of the groups that have shed light on the urgency of the issue. I think that UN agencies are fully aware of the importance and urgency of this issue. And at the meeting in Geneva a few weeks ago, both the Special Rapporteur for North Korean Human Rights, Marzuki Darusman, and Justice Michael Kirby, former chairman of the UN Commission of Inquiry on North Korean Human Rights, made the case for a dual-track approach to North Korea. One track addressing accountability. After all, what we are dealing with in North Korea is crimes against humanity that have been committed and continue to be committed pursuant to policies established at the highest level of the state. On the other hand, the second track would be efforts to engage North Korea, to find some points of contact on human rights or humanitarian issues. And surely, as emphasized by Justice Kirby, the issue of separated families could provide one such issue that might facilitate more interaction and dialogue between the two Koreas. What's interesting about the separated family issue is that if you look at the track record of contact on this particular issue, it seems that any progress in this regard seems to provide a basis, a foundation for addressing other issues, political issues included. I do not want to see this issue as a political issue. It is not. This is a humanitarian issue that has unfortunately been misused as a political issue and political capital by the northern side.
Right, to follow up with that, I've seen this concern before that these reunions have become politicized and that they're used as a bargaining chip when things are not going well along the DMZ, as we saw earlier this summer. I'm wondering, too, if they're used as a propaganda tool in the North to show the benevolence of the regime. So how would you respond to these concerns?
Of course, the North Korean regime will never miss an opportunity to present itself, to present the leader of North Korea in particular, as an extraordinarily magnanimous individual who has bestowed his goodwill upon not only families in North Korea, but also in South Korea. Of course, they will not miss a beat. Of course, these meetings have been used, misused, and abused by the North Korean government as political capital. This will be the case with any type of interaction with North Korea. And yes, of course, the North Korean authorities will aim to extract maximum benefits from any type of interaction, including family reunions between those separated members of families on both sides of the DMZ. I think that it's also important to remember that this is a humanitarian issue, and most unfortunately, most regrettably, it's a humanitarian issue with a clear expiration date. President Park Geun-hye of South Korea has spoken of her vision reliant on trust politik, building trust between the two Koreas. Now we know that North Korea is not a country or society that relies on trust internally. This is not a government that has earned trust internationally. On the contrary, this is a government that has squandered away any trust that it may have had, for example, by defaulting on its foreign debt, joining the NPT, pulling out of the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, joining the six-party talks, pulling out of the six-party talks, joining the Geneva Agreed Framework, pulling out of the Geneva Agreed Framework, ratifying international human rights documents such as the two covenants, the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. So that said, if trust politic is to happen, trust must be rebuilt. So I would say that from the viewpoint of North Korea, these family reunions could also be an opportunity to start building some of the trust that's needed to make real progress in inter-Korean relations.
So do we know much about how North Korea organizes these reunions from their side? What's the process like before these reunions take place?
What we know is that anyone allowed to have any type of interaction with people from the outside world, and especially with people from South Korea, will be subjected to strict scrutiny. As you know, North Korea is the only country in the world that classifies its own population into three categories and more than 50 subcategories pursuant to their perceived level of loyalty to the regime. Now, presumably, if one has family on the other side of the DMZ, that's not a plus in one's Songbun classification. So presumably, some of the relatives, in some cases, of those who are still in North Korea, their very background and the fact that they had family in South Korea might mean that they're not seen as exactly the very super core of the elites. But that said, North Korea will carefully examine the background of those who are cleared to participate in the meetings. They will make sure that they're, so to say, ideologically pure, and will also make sure that whatever interaction they have with South Koreans, whatever side effects of interaction with South Koreans there may be, those side effects will be isolated, terminated, not allowed to get out into the broader North Korean population. But that said, we do not have very detailed information on how this actual process of selecting individuals for the family reunions is run in North Korea.
So you mentioned this earlier, Justice Michael Kirby, who headed the UN Commission of Inquiry that published their famous reports last year on North Korean human rights, was quoted recently saying that, quote, "It's extremely cruel of the administration of North Korea and a breach of fundamental human rights to deny the opportunity for families to be reunited," end quote. So far, I think North Korean human rights concerns have mostly focused on prison camps, censorship, other such practices. Do you think it would be helpful to include family reunions more prominently within this larger conversation on human rights?
This is surely a significant humanitarian and human rights issue. It's an issue that has been addressed in the report of the UN Commission of Inquiry. And I think that including this issue in the bundle of issues to be addressed in North Korea is the way to go. At the same time, addressing the separated family issue should not be done at the expense of addressing the other critical issues, in particular, North Korea's political prison camp system, foreign nationals and South Korean nationals abducted by North Korea. Remember, these are also separated families that you're dealing with. And most importantly, crimes against humanity that have been committed in both regards, pertaining to the political prison camps and pertaining to the abduction of South Korean nationals and nationals of other countries.
So, Greg, is there anything else you think people need to know before these reunions take place this week? Anything we should be looking out for?
I think that we should surely focus on the family reunions as a humanitarian endeavor. And we should also focus not only on the humanitarian side of this, but also on family reunions as an opportunity for North Korea to build and rebuild some of the trust it has squandered away over the years. Having been a student of the two Koreas for the past 25 years, I will not be holding my breath over this, but nevertheless, an opportunity is an opportunity. As far as NGOs are concerned, whether you're talking about humanitarian NGOs or human rights NGOs, I think we all need to be supportive. This might not be at the very core of our portfolio. This might not be at the very core of what we do. But I cannot think of any group or individual in this community who might think that this is not a good idea. This is not a perfect process. There are very serious issues. Once again, these reunions do not happen within, or so far at least have not happened within an environment conducive to an emotional reunion of family members separated for decades. These meetings have been highly politicized by the northern side, let's say it. These meetings have been used by the North Korean side as leverage, as political capital. They have been tightly controlled. The atmosphere has been militarized. Surprise, surprise, that's how things are run in North Korea.
Greg, thank you very much for joining us today and talking to us about this really important issue.
Pleasure is all mine, John.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you again next time.